Okay. So, dirty start?
Ready, man.
I said dirty start.
Oh, I don't know what that means. I don't want to pull up the Urban Dictionary to find out.
Oh, I'm sure it's something terrible. No, and I don't even know if that's a real radio term. I just meant like, you know, not being a clean, produced start.
Oh, sure. Exactly. The world sees you beginning.
Yeah.
And hears you beginning. It's not the clean, you know, ready, 3, 2, 1, and the newscaster sits down because they don't have pants on and they clear their throat really quick and blow their nose, but nobody hears or sees any of that. Yeah. It's all business.
Although they have the satellite feeds that they used to do, well, they probably still do, but when I was taking television production class in high school, we used to be able to watch the satellite feeds where it showed Dan Rather sitting there and like saying weird things to people while he was getting ready for the broadcast. Did you ever watch those? Oh, okay.
No, I never did. I took TV tech in high school though.
Oh. But
we didn't have any cool satellite feeds to check out. I just remember the giant VCR tapes and the shuttle things where you could, you know, get those star wipes precisely positioned between, you know, video A and you know, video B.
Yeah, we did have the giant industrial sized videotapes as well, and the old knob turn editors that we used to use for editing video. But yeah, we also had like all sorts of satellite feeds that we could watch. And then we had an awesome Amiga computer, with which we did our titles, which was, it was state of the art in 1991.
That is incredibly fancy.
Anyway, hey, Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com. Good to see you, as it were.
Hey, good to see you, Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com. And both of us hailing from leanintoart.com, of course.
Right.
The whole purpose of this podcast.
Yes. And okay, so for those listening to the audio after the fact, what we're doing with this episode, I'll just get this out of the way, is we're testing out the idea of broadcasting the recordings live via Google Hangouts. Reason being, when we do these episodes anyway, or when we do these episodes, we're recording over Skype video anyway. So why not just let it pump out to the crowds and see if we can if people want to watch us as we do it, if they want to interact with us while we do the show. Or not, or at the very least, we get to have fun with this really crazy technology called Google Hangouts, right?
Exactly. So we're practicing it just like learning how to operate that giant VHS tape was, you know, it was totally a marketable skill.
thanks for putting this in perspective for me, Rob. Thanks so much. I feel a lot better now.
I can run a Google Hangout and Fry Station and the giant VHS tape.
No, actually, this
is good stuff. I mean, we can, we like to experiment with this, and I think something good will come out of it no matter what, because it'll end up informing what we want out of our next classroom tool, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatnot. So, yeah.
Well, and you know, going back a ways into the archives of the show, we talked a lot about switching back and forth between audio and video episodes. The video episodes would be more like talks or presentations with a video or a visual component to it. And then we'd go back to doing just one of our emergent topic audio discussions in between. But this, you know, I love the idea of figuring it out as we go along and letting us play with technology to discover what we want to do with it next, rather than have like a really clear game plan, having the big idea game plan of what we want to do, what we want to accomplish, but then incrementally along the way, let little surprises happen as we push ourselves into different directions. Like, okay, what would happen if we started broadcasting live with a chat client or with a live video embed someplace? How would that change how we do things, and what might we discover? Or would we discover that we don't like it at all? Then we don't do it anymore. That's the cool thing that we get to do when we own our own stuff.
Exactly. And I'm curious. We've already had a few interesting bumps trying this out. I think it shows some pretty strong potential though. So I'm curious. I mean, our whole topic isn't actually doing a podcast while you are in a Google Hangout.
No, but I just felt that was necessary to get out of the way since this is our first time doing it.
And it's bound to come up. I mean, it's the technology doesn't just disappear into the background right away. We need to get used to it.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, are you hardwired into your internet or are you doing this over Wi-Fi? I'm just curious.
I actually am doing both right now. So
oh, you're so awesome. So you've got this running on two different machines right now. You've got your whole NASA style mission control in front of you while I'm just sitting in front of my lonely desktop machine.
No. I do that sometimes with my main workstation. Is I'll leave it on the wireless network while it's wired in. And sometimes we've done setups where that's been fun, actually. If we have what was something helpful for that? If we needed to share a desktop and also see our faces or something. I can't remember what was the good we were playing around with like maybe doing a game show via Adobe Connect. Oh. I think. And you would need that extra desktop logged in where it's really another way for you to control like you could share a I forget why we're doing it. Basically you could share two desktops. I think that's why. Mm. And then like one could be a scoreboard and the other could be, you know, a drawing app or something.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, I can't believe we've been doing this so long that I'm starting to forget the things that we've done. But yeah, this is episode 45, Rob. Holy cow.
Yeah, I know. We're on 45, but we're darn close to like chronologically a year for when we were starting the actual podcast aspect of our endeavor. So darn close.
We'll do something.
I didn't think we missed that. Sorry.
I was going to say we'll do something special for the year anniversary, but
cool.
But I'm the kind of guy who forgets anniversaries, so you'll have to ping me politely.
Yeah, that's funny. I've been meaning to ask you when your birthday is too, but because I forgot.
I don't like to share that information.
I know. Yeah.
Because I don't like to make a big fuss out of it. You know, it's like I was born. I lived another year. I didn't die. Good for me. You know, I don't need people to say happy birthday in order for me to feel like our friendship is intact.
Yeah, so. Fair enough. But. Let's see. I can actually. What's that? It's the whole acknowledging of rites of passage and celebrating things. And I know, like, I will actually not celebrate doing some pretty big projects. I actually am kind of bad at that, and I assume it's because I'm. Near addicted to the process of working hard on the thing that is being created to get released. And then should that release go well, then I've got nothing, you know, to worry about until I start tackling the next project. But yeah. Anyway, I think it's good to, so for me, I'm trying to shake a few different habits by acknowledging, just acknowledging things better, just being more present.
Yeah, yeah. No, we talked about this in the Me Party episode, and I do think this is important. It's just that it's the birthday thing is one of the ones that I choose not to make a public celebration. Whereas,
fair enough.
And other things I do think are very, very important to celebrate. Anyway, speaking of celebrations, I want to point people at the Polytechnic Cast episode that you just posted recently. What was it called? It was the Golden Axe episode.
The Golden Axe 2 arcade of KRC wrap-ups.
Yes.
And the reason I called it that was because I was reading up on the different artists that I met, checking out their websites, and it was Jay Torres, who in the tagline of his website calls himself the Sammo Hung of making comics. I just thought that was awesome. So
that is awesome.
Like, I can't really think of an actor or something cool like that. So I decided, well, you know what? Golden Axe 2 Arcade.
Oh, this is kind of cool. While we're doing the hangout, people can comment on the Google+ post. So Kate's in there watching right now.
Oh, good. Okay. That's what we need to. Okay. Because I was wondering, how do we have that audience dialogue?
Yeah, there it is in the comments. And I did not realize it's your wedding anniversary today. Kate just made that public.
It's, yeah, yep.
Oh, that's, what a terrible man am I that I'm like, hey, Rob, let's do a thing. Forget about your wife. Hang out with me.
No, that's funny. And how fitting that I just was talking about your birthday and my wife goes, well, it's our wedding anniversary. Yeah. Yep.
So see, this is another, how many years?
Eight.
Oh.
Yeah.
Long enough to be comfortable around each other.
Yeah. We had a conversation about that earlier. So different people have different definitions of being comfortable around one another. And we're absolutely comfortable around one another, but I don't know where to continue with that. It's, yeah. Anyway, different strokes to move the world.
Well, happy anniversary, both of you guys.
Thanks.
And congratulations for bucking the trend. What is it? Most marriages last 4 or 5 years nowadays. So you guys are already a success story in the United States. Good for you.
So. Yeah. It rocks. And Kate's so awesome. I'm sitting here on a podcast on our wedding anniversary.
Okay.
So.
That is a testament to how awesome Kate is and how strong your marriage is.
There you go. All right. So,
topics. Yay. Speaking of celebrations, I wanted to bring up the Polytechnic Cast of the Golden Axe discussion that you did because A, it was a good discussion or it was a good essay, but B, it reminded me about the Kids Read Comics celebration, which we're not going to go into in great detail here because we already did our wrap up episode. But one of the conversations that came up during KRC was an interesting one that you planted this mammoth perennial seed in my brain about, which was accepting compliments. And there we were hanging out with a whole bunch of really great artists who we really liked being around. We liked them just genuinely as people, but also we admired them as creators. And when we started saying nice things to some of them were thinking or who reacted like, I don't know how to take this. I don't know how to, and you know, I don't know where you want to start with this. I don't know if you want to do the framing on this one, because this was kind of your submission as a topic. And I just kind of went, oh yeah.
Well, it's, let's see. So as far as framing it, when do you become aware of like something you want to work on? Right. So let's say you have a habit of like, oh, I like to, always be tweaking my process. And then when do you notice that when do you discover that thing you want to change or tweak, right? That to me, it's like you cross a threshold and something clicks. And for me, it was someone complimented the Polytechnicast on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and I didn't know what to do. because I ran around the house screaming and jumping over things and celebrating, and
I was going to go into my Today Show line of questioning with what's going through your mind when someone compliments you.
Well, first, I think, no, 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 no. And then I start running. It was really cool. But then when I started to try to reply, so there was like stages, like I crossed multiple thresholds. First, I thought, why am I having a hard time with this? And then I'm like, oh, whatever, let's just do this. And then I started trying to reply to it. Yeah. And then I got stuck again. And I thought, well, this would be an interesting topic because I can't believe I know for a fact that with artists and people in general can have a hard time accepting a compliment.
And what's interesting to me is trying to dig at the reasons why. Let's point out let's go back to some Rob Stenzinger classic modes of thought, which is this a systemic thing or is this an incidental thing? Does this come from some kind of way of thinking that's baked into us that is damaging to our art and our careers? Is this something where it's just a negative inflection of a positive aspect to being creative? What makes us do this? Because this is something that, here's where I'm going to try to frame it real quick before we really, really dig into this thing, is that it's like many, many artists report this, that we remember a negative comment so much more readily than we remember a positive comment. You know, you can get compliments all day long, and then all it takes is one person to say, yeah, but that stinks. And you're like, oh my gosh, what if they're right? You know, somebody found out that I'm truly a fraud after all, and then it just sits and it eats at you. And you can remember that one comment like 3 years later, but then you forget all of the nice things that people said. Oh, I like your thing. Oh, this character is really funny. Oh, I like that drawing you did. For some reason, so many of us, myself included here and there, we're ready to just forget about that or not accept it or consider it suspect somehow, you know?
And especially the pointing out, like you did, the relative weight that we give to the positive versus the negative feedback. So this is a topic of by way of thinking of compliments and then further thinking of other kinds of feedback to right. sort of contrast that to how we react to compliments.
Sorry, no stupid helpy tips this time. All right, I'm not going to go into this whole like believe in yourself and believe in love and romance and promises kept and everything's going to be okay. People are going to say nice things and that's all right. You know, it's really what's interesting to me is getting at what's the deeper thinking going on behind this phenomenon. Does that make sense, or did I just say bad things?
That's cool. We can just blurt that out. You know, bleep that out.
Already you're getting saucy. We start live streaming already. Rob starts giving me the razz.
A little bit. let's see. So what's a situation you feel comfortable with in unboxing a compliment, right? So probably a compliment related to creative works. We probably could think back. Chuck a few at you now and then during the Lean Into Artcast.
Sure. Yeah, we both do like some mutual admiration stuff on some episodes. I admit to that. We've closed out many episodes where I say like, oh, Rob, I really like this about doing the show. And then you say, right back at you. And then you throw a few more on for me. Even sometimes our texts to one another would be like, you know, this is one of my favorite things to do in the whole world. I'm trying to think of a situation where I was really uncomfortable. I mean, like, I think of like situations where there was a time not long ago where somebody came up to me at a convention and they were clearly nervous about talking to me. You know, they were so shy. They were doing like the giggly thing where they couldn't quite talk. And then that was uncomfortable just because there was the opportunity for a social interaction there and a connection to be made. And it was being kind of spoiled by someone being uncomfortable, you know? You know what I mean?
Sure. So that's interesting. So there are a lot of angles to this. So there's even in the delivery of a compliment, because I was assuming that like we could talk about the source of compliments. So if someone is coming up to you and how sort of their condition and how they're giving it to you can affect the overall experience.
Yeah.
So if someone is like really hand wringing, and because I guess it's giving it a context of it's almost a they're seeing it as a hierarchy as far as your relationship to them as a human being.
Yeah,
it's and I guess if not, it doesn't have to be that way, I'd imagine, but there's something that's really putting them in a state of discomfort, which I guess a natural reaction to that. Like if it's public, like for, think of a public speaking context, when someone's speaking and feeling uncomfortable, the audience will have this uncomfortable reaction from just from empathy, right? Mm-hmm. Saying, oh gosh, I'm worried for you. Oh, you're going to bomb. Oh no. Right. I can't watch, you know, or that kind of thing where all of a sudden it's not about that initial act anymore. It's about this other thing going on.
I've actually been to a couple of musical concerts in my time. I was just at a social gathering recently where somebody introduced me as this guy who's kind of a freak because he really doesn't know anything about music. And then like the room started quizzing me and somebody brought up a band called Outkast. Is that what they're called? And then I said, oh, I haven't heard of the Outkasts. And they thought I was actually, you know, BSing them. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, but there was a time where I actually went to musical concerts. And I went to see Morrissey. And now Morrissey, he has a certain kind of mystique and cachet. And, you know, like he exudes a certain thing, like a certain Elvis-ishness, right?
True.
Sort of a Brit emo kind of Elvis-ishness. And so as a result, like Elvis, there were people who were bum-rushing the stage to try to hug him. And they just wanted to hug the man. And like one girl gets up there and she hugs him. And then he hugs her back, and then the security guys pull her away and put her in the crowd. Well, this unleashed a floodgate of people trying to bum rush him to where some equipment got damaged on the stage. Like stuff got knocked down. Like one of the monitors got knocked down. I heard the big like feedback thing. Woo! And everybody's like, ah.
Oh my.
And it completely changed the dynamic of the event from, wow, I'm watching Morrissey be Morrissey, and he's fixing his hair a lot, and he's doing that thing where he whips the microphone cable when he's dancing around and singing Shyness is Nice and everything. To, oh my God, I'm really worried about Morrissey. I'm really nervous about what's going to happen to this guy. And I'm also a little kind of uncomfortable and a little embarrassed for these people who are really making complete fools out of themselves, trying to get on that stage at all costs. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm going astray of the whole idea of compliments, but yeah, there is that context of who's giving it, right?
No, I think that, yeah, that is a really good example that we do run into. Where we'll have people that we've elected publicly through the collective what societal tribes that we have, we say, oh, these people represent something that's super duper important, or they're worthy of extra adoration because of their achievements or creativity or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people get quirky about that. and then obviously even if you don't have that intention to really hug the crap out of Morrissey, right? It, because you're in a situation where there's a lot of people wanting to do that, it would be difficult to have some really easy exchange of like, I really dig your music, and hey, could you sign this, you know, this compact disc?
This compact musical disc.
This mini disc or DAT tape.
DAT tape.
Laser wow. disc.
Anyway. And I'm trying to think, I don't know if we're like steering ourselves towards building like some AirSats definitions of what kind of compliments are out there, because then there's like compliments from
playing
like,
around with it. Playing around with the context.
Yeah, there we go. We're sort of feeling around in the dark around this idea of called context. And then there's the person who isn't like that kind of maniacal super fan, but they come up to you and they just say, hey, I'm a fan of everything you did. It had an impact on me, and I just want to let you know I love this about your work. And then there's the compliments that come from your peers. There's the compliments that come from somebody who you either have worked with or work alongside of or have run in similar tracks in your various careers, and you respect what they've achieved, and their opinion carries a certain kind of a different kind of weight, right? When they say something positive about your work. And then there's the compliment that comes from somebody who you don't travel with, like somebody who you've looked up to and admired from afar from a long time, when they say something nice about you. I want our discussion to try to encompass all of these if possible, although I'm sure there's going to be exceptions to all the things that we start to dig at, because all of these different contexts have different intents and purposes and intended outcomes, right? So the person who wants to hug Morrissey, they're not interested in a human exchange. They're not interested in communicating with him person to person. They're just interested in getting their picture taken hugging Morrissey, right?
Whereas, sure, and trying to get some Morrissey DNA as they go through that act, whether, you know, spittle, hair gel mixed with spittle or whatever.
Right. I got some of his microbes on me. Hooray.
Yay.
Whereas like the person who comes up and says like, oh, your work had a profound effect on me and I just wanted you to know, that's a completely different intended effect. And then the peers and so on. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, we know people, and we won't name names, but we know people who have made some achievements in their careers. And we discussed with them over the course of the various days of during Kids Read Comics when you know, we'd say something nice and they'd be like, yeah, well, you know, I just don't know how to respond to that. And it's like when do you get off the hook? When do you get off the hook of this thing of being uncomfortable with praise?
Oh yeah, because you could toss all those contexts, all those relationships to, you know, between you and the source of the praise aside, and maybe it wouldn't even matter where it comes from, but you could just be always uncomfortable with it in some way. whether, let's see. And that's where I start to get into the sort of the systemic approach, right? Where mm-hmm. I hope, pray, like for me, this is what I, getting back to that tweet example. This is where I wanted to say, I hope this is not just a single incident, right? I would like this to happen again. So I started to think about it as a system, like, well, this is a feedback mechanism and I want more feedback, I think. And I want to be comfortable with different sources of the feedback. So how do I go about that? And so that's what I started to do, is just look at it based on, you know, my relationship to this sort of exchange, which I don't know if that sounds just horribly robotic or,
I would call that clear. That would be the word I'd throw on that.
just, I'm always in expectation management mode. So I didn't get much sleep, Jersey. I don't know if I'll be that lucid on this podcast. So
why did you get much sleep?
I'm joking. Oh. I'm managing expectations.
Oh, I see. But yeah, I love the fact that you said, I want more interaction, I think. That's such a great qualifier. Like, yeah, we do think that we want that. And it's not, you know, sometimes it's not until we actually get it that we figure out whether or not we want it. But
exactly. Because I don't want to be tackled by people like you're describing Morrissey, you know, hugged until amps get kicked over and all that. And
right.
Nah.
And I mean, I'll dog ear that one. But I think it's fair to admit, and I mean, I think this is like a foregone conclusion. This is something that's like, it's just evident that we want that positive feedback. We want people to love what we're doing. I find it very hard to believe that there's people out there who don't want positive feedback when they share their work with the world, right? I'll accept that as a possibility, but I find it very difficult to believe. I'm skeptical about that notion. So bearing that in mind, then it raises this interesting question. When we finally get what we want positive feedback, want people to love our stuff. And then we sit there and we put our stuff online and we're like, hey, when are people actually going to say nice things about it? And then somebody says something nice about it and we're like, oh, I don't know how to deal with this. What? Why? You don't get to do that.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I was trying to hold myself accountable for, this where I'm like, I want the feedback. I got the feedback and it's kind. It seems from a person being, going out of their way to say something positive. And of course I want to honor that and I need to live up to it, because I was basically, baiting them by providing the podcast and, you know, reaching out in that fashion. So why not find a way to respond to it? So that's what's going through my head. I'm like, I am going to, and then I said, I'm not setting this task down until I figure it out. And so,
okay, let me ask you. I'll use a line of questioning, and this time I'm not going to use today's show style. What do you think? Why do you think that you get uncomfortable when somebody hands you a kind word? What are you afraid of? If you're afraid that's really going on. If I say, hey Rob, that thing you said on the Polytechnic Ask, I mean, okay, here's an actual real compliment I gave you. Is after KRC. I said, man, Rob, your presentation style is just getting so good. I watched you go from a year ago from the guy who's pretty good at presenting to a guy who was electric at presenting.
Special effects help. Special effects.
See, why make that joke? Why deflect it with a joke, right? Why deflect it at all? Why not take it?
Good point. Yeah, good point. You deserve to sit back and feel very satisfied right now.
I do like feeling satisfied.
you have earned that moment. Let's see. Why deflect it? Partially, let's see, for a playful release of tension, right? And I find the moment tense because, let's see, I want to believe that the work I do is worthy of that. Let's see. It's worthy of that kind consideration. And here's where I got choked up on those sort, not, you know, choked up as in, you know, hesitating in replying, you know, to that tweet, is the words that I would come up with to describe, to honor the feedback. I didn't want to be half-hearted, right? So someone said something wholehearted and kind, and thanks, I didn't bye. Want to what's that?
Like, yeah, just responding with a thanks, bye, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, sure, the word thanks fits, but it doesn't seem complete enough because its common usage is kind of, it nullifies the feeling the word should have. I guess that's why words have a denotation and a connotation. I would say the connotation of thanks is kind of like, thanks, you know, or very businessy and not showing the care, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so part of it could be that I'm coming, here's something that came to mind is I may be worried about how to live up to what you just said. Yeah. How do I return your gesture in kind? You've made me feel good and aware of something that you're giving me positive reinforcement, right? So there's something that I am working on to grow at and gain higher effectiveness and capability or whatever the heck you want to say, skill, right? I'm working to build my skill as a presenter and think of many aspects of that and then act upon it and then in preparation and then act upon it in the moment when delivering a workshop and connecting with the group there. And there's a lot of things I have been working on. And then to get it acknowledged in such a clear way, in such a kind way, that puts me in a position where I want to all of a sudden acknowledge that in a way that isn't lame. Yeah. And it took me a lot of words to come up with that.
No. Well, Mr. Clarity, Mr. Explicit. No, I totally get that. I mean, especially when you get like a kind response on Twitter and you've got 140 characters, how do you express how much it means to you that somebody took the time and had the care and intent and courage to reach out to you to share their thoughts about what your stuff meant to them, right?
Right.
You don't want to just say, thank you very much for your input. We at Jersey Droz Incorporated value customer satisfaction very seriously. So you want to craft something that expresses to them how much it meant. However, you know, there's also overdoing it. You know, you don't want to be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to wrap this up in a bow and I'm going to put it under my pillow every night and I'm going to, you know, think kind thoughts of you every day. Whoa. They just reached out and said, hey, I like the thing that you did, you know? So it is, you know, composing a thank you is tough, right?
It really does cut both ways, but there's different people's personalities. Maybe that is your relationship with praise. And I'm not passing judgment on that. That's fine. People have different makeups, right? Mm-hmm. Like I would say, when you get a lot of artists together, you're going to see people who have different sort of natural dispositions toward needing and wanting a ton of praise. Mm-hmm. And so for them, that's just kind of day-to-day fuel, day-to-day normal energy. They probably put themselves in a position to gain that, and then they kind of get fueled up and they keep on going. And they know they'll do something to keep getting that fuel where they like a lot of that feedback, where some artists would get it less frequently and partially maybe because they're not as worried about gaining that feedback in that way. Right.
Yeah.
Where, you know, maybe a little bit of a difference, what would lead someone down a comic artist path versus a rock star path versus, you know.
Right, right. Kate's actually in the comments. Mm-hmm. He threw an interesting wrench into the mix. Here comes Kate winding up with a curveball. She says, when you compliment someone, what is your expectation from them? I wonder if the expectations on both sides are to not have full acceptance of the compliment. Leave it to the psychologist to throw us that one.
Yep.
You know, I mean... we're probably going to be speaking in broad strokes here, but just speaking for myself, I would think that we're talking about anybody who reaches out to you to pay you a compliment is doing so because they want you to know that you did something that affected them. And they want you to, they want that exchange of author to audience to be acknowledged in some way. I don't know how many of my friends I've heard tell stories about going to meet one of their favorite celebrities, and on the moment of crisis, when they actually get there and meet the celebrity, they can't say anything except, "I'm a fan of everything you do." And then the celebrity says, "Oh, thanks a lot," and they sign the thing, and they walk away going, "Stupid, stupid, stupid," because they didn't have that perfectly composed thing that really expressed everything that their work meant to them. So there's that implies that some kind of exchange is intended on the part of the complimentor, right?
And let's see, when you compliment someone, I've had that same debate because exactly like what do you say when I have a signed poster from Iron Maiden from their Blaze Bailey days where I waited at Sam Goody in the Mall of America to, you know, get my picture with them and get this poster signed. And I dug the two Blaze Bailey albums, by the way, where Bruce Dickinson took a hiatus from Iron Maiden. They had a different lead singer for a couple albums. I had that where I'm like, what in the world do I say to them? And it's not like you're going to strike. I didn't really expect some kind of long-term relationship or something. You know, so how do you say that? Right. And you just say, well, I just really love what you do. And, you know, thanks for being here to sign my poster. I think I said something like that. Yeah. And
but that was still a meaningful thing to you. Right. Yeah. I mean, you got to say it to the dude's face that, yeah, this stuff affected you. And you're not walking up expecting there to be any kind of like, oh, now we're going to be roommates. But you wanted to have that exchange.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's like,
you guys have room on the tour bus, right?
Well, you could have bought the poster on eBay, right? You could get the autograph. I mean, this is one of the reasons we get autographs, to commemorate the moment when we had made contact with somebody who affected our lives in some kind of profound way, right?
So good point. That's an awesome description of an autograph.
That's how I think about him at any rate. I mean, I don't get it for any kind of value. I have a picture of Julius Schwartz that I keep on my desk, eating a candy from my table. Now, I had my interchange with Julius Schwartz. Julius Schwartz, for those who don't know, he was like a very, very important and influential. Oh, I just realized my audio is way too quiet. Well, nothing I can do about that now.
Mm. You were sounding good on my end.
Okay. Well, good. Julius Schwartz was this very important and influential editor at DC Comics. He changed the Golden Age Flash to the Silver Age Flash. He was responsible for the Golden Age Green Lantern becoming the Hal Jordan Silver Age Green Lantern. Very important guy in DC Comics history. And I was at a convention with him. He stopped by my table. I had a bowl of peppermint candies on the table. I said, free, take one. And so Julius Schwartz comes up and says, oh, peppermint, and grabbed one. And I said, Mr. Schwartz, can I please get a photo of you eating my candy? You know, that was the beginning and end of that interchange. We never said anything else to each other ever again. But I got a picture that is one of my most treasured items in my photograph collection of Julius Schwartz making this hammy pose while he's eating my peppermint. And why is it important to me? Does it commemorate this time when Julius Schwartz and I had a meeting of the minds and we really celebrated each other as people? No, it was a moment when I got to sort of like cross paths with somebody who really, his actions had a profound impact on my life. And I got to have this jokey moment where he was eating my candy. I think that's all most people are really looking for when they're looking for that kind of interchange. They're not looking for anything beyond that. But it's hard to say, right? We can't, like I said, we're going to be talking in broad strokes. I'm hoping I can back up a second though, because there was some language you used that really caught my ear. When somebody gives you a compliment, you said, "I want to believe my work is worthy of that." Now, I don't think that this was any kind of telling remark on your part. I don't think that I've checkmated you in terms of, you really don't feel your work is worth it. But I do think that this is part of one of the reasons that people have trouble accepting compliments in any kind of graceful way, is because, you know, for all of us, there's always that doubt. No matter how good the work is, no matter how much praise or celebration happens around your work, there's always a little bit of you that's thinking like, it's not as good as that guy. There's always a bigger fish. There's always somebody who does it better than you. And there's always an opportunity to doubt what you're doing. We're human beings after all. And so I do think that for some, that this is a situation where, well, maybe I don't deserve it. Maybe I'm getting something I don't deserve. And that causes, what do they call that? Cognitive guilt. Dissonance, right?
Cognitive dissonance. Oh, sure.
Where the war goes on in your head. How do I deal with this? If I accept it, I'm a liar. If I don't accept it, then they're going to know I'm a fraud anyway. You know, I'm not saying everybody's thinking this through that clearly, but
And that's the thing with cognitive dissonance is a lot of times it's just this, it's just stress. And it takes a bit of work to observe and unbox it and, understand, you know, those phases of it and whatnot. Where were you going with that?
Oh, I was going to take it down an even more mealy route where, you know, as bad as cognitive dissonance is, I think it's a perfectly human thing to experience and nothing totally. That we should get terribly stressed out about. That was a joke. Even worse is I think some people want to maintain the appearance of humbleness, you know, humility, and erroneously think that by saying, oh, you know, my work's not that good after all, is somehow maintaining that spirit of humility in the face of someone giving them praise, which this is old stuff. This is stuff that's been going on for years since the internet first started and then like 20 something started getting involved in posting their work online and not knowing how to deal with the public. They think that they do this all the time. You find some popular artist on DeviantArt and people go, oh, your stuff is great. Your stuff is great. Oh, no, the perspective's all wrong. Here's a story that I told during Kids Read Comics when we were having this discussion at my house. I'm going to go back to BotCon 2006. I went waiting 2 hours in line to meet Peter Cullen, the original voice of the original Optimus Prime. And I'm watching all these different people having exchanges with the man as I'm waiting and waiting and waiting to meet him. And as the whole time I'm waiting in line, I'm composing, like, what's important for this man to hear from me? What is it that I could say? Not, again, I don't want him to go, oh, you should come over to my house for dinner, or, you know, let's move to the south of France together and just talk about Transformers all day. All I wanted, like, and I thought about this really hard because I had plenty of time to think about it, as I said, I just need this man to know that the stuff he did that he wasn't thanked for when he was doing it, I mean, he was paid, but he never got any fan mail back then. I want him to know that it not only had a profound impact on me then, but it continues to have a profound impact on me today. And I just wanted the man to know that retroactively, here's your fan letter kind of thing, right? And that's as far as I wanted the exchange to go. So I get up to the guy after 2 hours and I say to him, oh, Mr. Cullen, thank you so much for these characters that you created. And I listed off like a dozen characters that he did over the years. And I said a few other words about what his work meant to me. And then he stood up and he shook my hand, took both, you know, double hand handshake. Oh my God, double hand handshake from Peter Cullen. And he says, anybody who would wait that long in line to say that to me must be a good person. And then I blurted out, because at this point I was almost ready to cry, as I said, you know, well, I meant it from the bottom of my heart. And then I got the hell out of there because I could not take the emotional strain anymore of this exchange that was happening. Now, that's a funny story, right? Grown man cries when he meets cartoon voice actor.
Yeah, it's funny and it's very, very sweet.
In its weird, nerdy way, yeah. Now, let's look at this story again. The reason I'm telling the story and revealing all the emotional rawness of the story is if I had waited that long and gone through all that emotional stress to be able to have this exchange, and if I were to say, Mr. Cullen, thank you so much for all these characters and this is what it meant to me, and if he were to say to me, oh, you know, it wasn't that good. I really needed to work on, you know, my pitch, and it's coming in a little bit dry here and there, and I could have done a better job if I really thought about it, but I guess I wasn't very good. How much would that deflate the moment? Had the man not graciously accepted the compliment, whether he meant it or not, he graciously accepted the compliment and returned the favor by just giving me that simple handshake that meant so much to me, and then we got to part our ways. I got to have my moment, and he got to hear some nice words from a guy. right? This is where I get to like my big point of the whole episode, and then I promise I'll shut up and hand you the floor, Rob, is that we had this discussion too, is that, gosh, I don't know how far I want to go into this. Rob, stop me if this is getting a little too close to the wires. Is I had this discussion about if I extend hospitality, friendship, or an invitation to somebody, say, I'll do this thing for you, or hey, we should hang out, or here's a gift, or whatever. I extend some kind of gesture of friendship or goodwill to another person. And that person looks me in the eye and goes, you sure? You don't have to. No, really, just don't, because it's and what is the other person trying to do in this situation? They're trying to be polite. They're trying to like say, don't put yourself out on my account, yeah. Right?
Sure. And I'm laughing because I'm the other person in this example.
Well, I didn't know if you wanted me to go this
way. No, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. And then my response to you was, is I said, you know, Rob, I know you're trying to be polite when you say this to me, but what you're really doing is you're saying, I don't trust your statement. I don't trust your intent. You are not honest enough with me that when you extend an invitation to me, you actually mean it. So I'm providing you with a way out so that you dishonest SOB, can renege on your invitation or your extension of goodwill. And then we can both go our ways or separate ways, and nobody has to feel bad about the situation. Now, I know that's not what you meant, but I was pointing out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's the weird aspect of, gosh, we're doing like lots of amateur psychology right now.
What else are podcasts for? Two white guys having amateur psychology. All we got to do is talk about Star Wars and we're done.
No, you're right. I mean, I agreed with you right on the spot too, where it's, let's see. Well, I mean, everyone's got their personality quirks. I'm no exception.
Oh, dude, and I got hangups coming out of everywhere. So don't, I mean, I don't want to present this as me having any kind of like corner office on the, you know, the being a paragon of humanity.
No. And let's see. I'm not trying to deflect it in that way. I'm just trying to explain and own up to it. And I agree that it actually connects to the topic of accepting compliments, because it has to do with, I would say, in a way, accepting kind gestures in general, and being willing to be at peace with them and not feel an exchange of some kind of debt or it's interesting. So, but I guess if there's no way we're going to cover the gamut of all kind gestures, right. But it is a very close territory to what we were talking about, I think, because let's see,
what I was trying to describe here is that a person expressing kind words about your work is generally speaking the same idea. And for you being the big you, the big recipient of the kind words, to deflect it in any way is, in my opinion, tantamount to saying, no, you don't really mean it. And I'm giving you the opportunity to say that you didn't mean it by saying, I don't deserve it. And it wrecks everything for everybody involved, you know?
Well, I'm a wrecker then, because I will definitely do my best to deflect things with humor, right? And I try to, by having a light moment, I want it to be a positive exchange, because I do appreciate the feedback and whatnot. But when it comes to, depending on the gesture, so in some ways I like to, I guess I play my interpersonal reactions toward the conservative quite often.
Well, and it's understandable too why you would deflect it with humor. I mean, and let's go into another reason that might be behind this kind of thing. And I'm not trying to pick you apart, Rob. I'm just saying.
Go ahead. Why not?
Well, I'm just trying
to get to like say, hey, yes, crank it up to twice this amount. Please don't.
Well, I'm just trying to get
at. We can follow through, you know.
I'm just trying to get at like the possible reasonings behind this so that we can be more aware of it when these kinds of things are happening, is that it could also be, as a dude with intimacy issues, you know, I'm not a hugger, and this has been well documented in a lot of places. It could be that, you know, that kind of personal exchange can lead to a form of intimacy between two people that maybe you're not easy with, right? Mm-hmm. And to address it with a corporate, thank you very much for your input. We value customer satisfaction. You know, that could be sort of felt on both sides as a refutation of that reaching out, right? When a fan is saying that they love your work, they're reaching out. They want to touch you somehow. They want to touch. I don't mean physically. I mean, you know what I mean. They want to get at you somehow a little bit. Which is
in some ways it's a reciprocation. It's like you caused this feeling, with your work. I that emotional content got through, and I want to respond because. Right. Just because I have the urge to do that. I mean, and some people respond by starting a career. You know what I mean? They'll just be like, yep, now I'm going to make comics because I experienced this work. I have to go do it. Yep, I'm going to go play guitar now because anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that, in my opinion, I mean, if you're talking about me, that is the kindest compliment you can pay me is to you know, like when I tweeted this a while back, I think, when a former student of mine revealed to me that her entry into comics began with a class she took with me. You know, she wanted to go into illustration, but then after taking my class, she decided that comics was going to be her life. And I think I said something like, I don't know whether to be proud or ashamed of that moment. Let me explain. Huh? Let me explain. So what I was saying was, is not that
bitter challenge that is comics.
Yes. I because of whatever actions I took and what choices she made, I've introduced this poor child to a life of pain that is comics. So that was what I meant by shame. Not that I should be ashamed in terms of, poor little me with my stupid stuff. Some poor fool came up. See, this is another thing. Is like if I were to say, oh, poor stupid little me with my stupid stuff, then am I not insulting her for reacting so positively to it? Because then I'm saying, oh, I fooled her. She is a dummy because she, reacted well when she really should have saw me for the fraud that I am. And if that's really what you think, then why are you sharing stuff in the first place? You know?
Exactly. Well, obviously our feelings about this are more complicated than a simple interaction is going to convey.
Yeah.
And I think I'm starting to puzzle out maybe a little bit of that pushback. And this happened, we were talking about this a little bit before the power outage. It maybe a little bit of that pushback is good to just see, to dial in. Maybe it is to actually reach out, not to push away, to say, are we on the same page? Because in some ways, I am both pushing on you and advocating for you for that reaction to your student, because in some ways you're saying, I think you might be sharing my same psychosis or this quirk, this thing that makes me want to do this. And yet, you know, puts a series of really challenging hurdles along my path. And I think you have a quirk that's going to, you know, lead you to choose similar things. Do we really share this quirk? I don't know. So I'm sorry I set you on this path, but all of a sudden it depends on if the dialogue ends there or if it continues, and you can eventually jive up where she can give you guff for insulting her, and then you can reply and like you did for me,
right?
Where you're like, right. Aren't you basically, you know, calling me an idiot? inferring that I'm, you know, my offer isn't genuine and that really isn't my intent.
Of course not. Of course not. I know that you're a guy with nothing but goodness in his heart. I know that you would never ever suggest that truly. No, I'm not being glib here. It's that what I was trying to point at is that it could easily be construed as such, right? It could easily
agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so part of the context is, do you have enough trust to have more to the conversation besides that, or leave it at that exchange?
And also it's a little bit about, like, when I was saying that stuff about, like, you know, you leaving me an out is insulting to me, is kind of taking responsibility for my own words too, right? It's like, I don't want to be the guy who, I try not to be the guy who says things that he doesn't mean. And I want to be responsible to where if I say, hey, Rob, here, would you like to borrow $10,000 from me? And you say yes, I don't get to go, dang, he took it.
Yeah, it's totally in my wiring to verify those kinds of things where I'm like, well, did you really mean it? And I don't mean to insult you by checking in on that.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I mean to be open to the possibility and really okay with it either way. But and that's definitely a quirk I own up to, and I'm being I mean, that's a bit of a caretaking kind of personality thing. That's a bit of a over responsible kind of approach to things that I love it when I, you know, encounter someone where that's, they're like, no, I really meant that. And they're patient enough with me to not be mad that I mildly insulted them.
Ooh, that sounded like passive aggression.
No, I mean,
I know, I'm kidding.
Dang.
I'm having fun with you. I'm having fun with your words. As a guy who is extremely explicit about everything, it is an absolute pleasure to try to play with every word that you throw at me.
Alrighty.
Because I know that every time I go, oh, and then you're going to give me 55 more words to try to explain that one. No, but anyway, I want to go back to, like, summary thoughts on this. We got to close. We got to get back to our lives, and I don't want to test the fates any further with what the power demons are going to do. But one more little twist to put on this whole discussion is that we started out by talking about what is the complimentor's intent and understanding that. What do they hope to gain? Where are they coming from as a person? Because I've also had situations where I've had fans. I hate that word, by the way, but and I've made no secret of that too. I like the idea of, like, readers or listeners or, you know, compatriots. I don't know what you call them. Constituency.
Some kind of participatory verb.
Yeah, but not fans. I don't like the idea of people being fanatical about anything that I did, and also it brings in the whole hierarchical thing. But anyway, for lack of a better term right now, I've had a few who, I don't know where they're coming from. There's no wavelength connection happening when they're talking to me. And it's clear that I've done something that makes them really happy, and that is super awesome. But when they're talking to me, it's like they're talking underwater in German. I don't understand what they're saying. I don't know where they're coming from, and I don't know what it is that they got from my work. In that situation, you know, there's very little I can do or say other than be the polite corporate, well, thanks so much. And this is where I get to my final thoughts on this. Is like, my rule book is on this kind of situation is to try to be genuine and try to gauge it based on the person who's talking. Like, if a guy comes up to me, it's like, dude, your stuff rocks. I'm going to get, thanks, man. Cause, you know, that's the way he engaged with me. It's like when you're answering an email and somebody says, hey, Rob, or versus dear Mr. Stenzinger, right? Your reaction
tone matching.
Yeah. You're going to match them for their level of, what would you call that? Not propriety.
Tone matching is, yeah. Just, you know, I'm repeating it, but, you know, yeah. I think that's a fair summary.
Whereas if somebody comes up and says, Mr. Joe's
energy,
attitude. Yeah. So if somebody comes up to me and says, Mr. Joe's, I really enjoy your work very much. It really touched me deeply. Then I'm going to do a much more kind of formal, like, oh, thank you so much. Your words made my heart smile or whatever. Right. But in every case, my rule is they get a thank you. They get some kind of thank you. And usually the way I like to phrase it is, thanks so much for taking the time to say those things. It means a lot to me as a guy who does this stuff. You know, it's nice that I'm not screaming into the void. I'm glad that it's connecting with somebody. And when you say that several times, it may feel a little bit rehearsed to you, but it isn't to them. I don't know how many times Peter Cullen shook somebody's hand and said, anybody who would wait that long to say such nice things to me must be a good person, right? He might have said that 100 times that day. I don't care. I got that interchange, you know, and from my standpoint, you know, the man's an actor. He might have been acting. I don't care. I don't want to think about it. I want to think that moment was genuine and real. So I don't know if I just said anything or if that was like some kind of like cynical way of looking at it, but My big point was that I think anybody who engages with you, even if you don't know where they're coming from, they at least deserve a thanks for that. And I think it is not a service to them to get uncomfortable and weird and say, oh, no, but, because all you're doing is diffusing a moment where somebody's trying to say hooray for you and you're telling them that they're wrong for saying hooray for you.
When you probably set out to cause that anyway. Right. I mean, you went and made something educational, entertaining, useful, whatever, and you shared it. And then wouldn't you know it, someone said thanks. It can happen. Stranger things happen. And it's, let's see. So what kind of feedback are they seeking? And let's see what I think it's worth just thinking about it from a systemic perspective. That's my, I don't think that's a stupid helpy tip, but it's kind of a way to oversummarize, but no matter that I think is actually useful.
Right.
Like, well, what do you want out of it? And, if there are a couple of those situations to consider, it's worth, deciding, an approach. It's a sort in a way it's a business strategy. In a way it's a creative, being on the internet strategy, because you'll run into the different kinds of people with different coming from different angles, and which could be your peers, or it could be someone who's just coming from a really different place. Maybe it's just a different culture where, you know, all they talk about is your nose, and it's like supposed to mean something really important, but where they're from, they talk about your nose and whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's a totally straw man baloney thing, but, just trying to exemplify things. Or maybe they're just really nervous and they never even thought about your nose, but now that all they can think about is your nose, because, and then they can't think of anything else, and that's what comes out. And then the moment's done. And, but you could tell they tried to compliment you, or you could have someone that you've, really enjoyed their work for a few years. And then they come around and provide some really thoughtful feedback. That's it also has some complimentary words in there. And what are you going to do about that? I don't have anything canned by any means, but like I've taken on this task now. It's on my mind probably for the next few weeks or months. I'll be thinking about this and building up a little bit of a repertoire, almost like when you are tabling at a convention with your wares and people walk up and you practice pitching your things for the first time. To me, it's something very similar, where you have this kind of interaction, you just want to be ready for it and, you know, have a footing. That's all I'm looking for, is to get a better footing with this and learn a little bit.
And if it seems like you're rehearsing it, I think your analogy of the pitch for your book is apt, because when you're pitching for your book, you mean it every time, right? Even if it is a little bit rehearsed and polished, you mean it every time. And all polishing does in that situation is make the exchange graceful. And I think that is, and this is going back to a larger idea, and this is sort of a theme that's been building up through Lean Into Art for a while now, is something that I've been, you know, sort of fascinated by and taking very seriously, is this idea of we as artists also have to consider ourselves entertainers, not entertainers through the work, but entertainers in person. We have to be an engaging, entertaining person if we plan on doing this in an independent capacity. If you want to get picked up by a publisher, awesome. But even a publisher is going to put you out on the road to, you know, plug your book. Your fans are going to want to interact with you. And part of being an engaging and entertaining person is learning how to gracefully navigate weird situations. And when somebody comes up to you and makes you feel uncomfortable with this compliment or with whatever exchange, you got to find a way to handle it with grace. You reminded me of a whole nother thing that I want to dog ear for future discussion on another show, is sometimes people try to engage with you in a way that is very aggressive, and it's clear they want an interaction with you. But this isn't a discomfort out of somebody complimenting you. This is a discomfort out of somebody just not having social skills whatsoever. I'm just anticipating somebody listening or watching after the fact, bringing that up and saying, but what about? Noted, preemptively noted for a future show.
I think you nailed it, honestly, Jersey. I mean, you've seeking to work through this. And you know what, if you're more power to you, if you're an artist who already is like so at peace with every single compliment you ever get, that rocks. But I don't know. I think a lot of us are still puzzling that out. And I enjoyed chewing through that topic with you. So
I did too. Well, and I think it brings up an important thing that, you know, I've only recently come to peace with myself. And I don't even want to say I've come to peace with it. I've grown comfortable with it. Is it's okay for me to like hearing kind things about myself. You know, it's okay for me to save that email where somebody said a lot of nice things about me and shared some really, you know, kind of open emotional things about something that I said or did that affected them in some way. It's okay for me to remember that when a peer, somebody who I respect, said something very kind, even about something dumb. You know, it's like a friend of mine who I have a lot of respect for told me that I write good copy a while back. And I'm going to hang on to that one. Because you know what? Because day to day, there's a million opportunities to feel crappy about your work. And, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to pick yourself up with something like that every once in a while. And you know what? That's why we do it. Like you said, Rob, we make this stuff because we want to affect the world and affect people, and presumably in a positive way. And to get that feedback back is okay. Yeah. And we shouldn't feel weird or ashamed or uncomfortable with it. We should just take it and not let it get, you know, I'm not talking about like I put all these fan letters on a wall and then stand in front of it and go, ha ha, look at all the power that I've accumulated. But more or less to say like, cool, the kid did some stuff. The kid is making a mark. The kid is moving in a direction that he wanted to when he was a little kid. I think that's okay. Even a coach tells you good game, you know?
Well, good game, Jersey. that's what I'm getting at. And and I think I will be, not that you have to couch every single one of these things in like, oh, your feedback, person number, you know, three that I met today, that's, you're a peer and I've read your work before. So I'm going to count that times three in whatever. Now I'm not trying to convey that. And yes, I am sort of disclaiming, but I don't, I'm past the no disclaimers. I'm once again at peace with them. So, it's, for me, it depends on where they're coming from, as a place, but it's useful to think about. And I like the process, and I like doing this podcast with you, Jersey. So you don't have to, we don't have to have the text afterward. This is one of my favorite things to do, Jersey.
So. And hey, segue, if you folks listening or watching enjoyed what we did, a great way you could say, pay us a compliment is to go to iTunes and give us a star review. That's a nice, simple, anonymous way to let us know that you're enjoying the show, and it helps raise our awareness in the number one place that people look for podcasts, so that other people who you might think wouldn't get something out of this discussion, they can find it too. So it compliments us, helps other people out. Whoa, talk about power in one click of a mouse. iTunes, lean into art. That almost sounded like I knew what I was talking about.
Awesome.
So I guess we'll be back next week, right? And we'll see if we want to try this Google Plus thing again.
Yeah, we might give it a shot. I mean, maybe we'll have to arrange some, what do they call it? Service level agreements with your power company.
Yeah.
Or hookup generators or something. No, whatever.
Well, maybe the heat wave will be over by then.
We will brave whatever technology strikes our fancy. Perhaps this one again.
And you know, anybody who's listening to this after the fact, let us know if you think that doing this via live on-air hangouts is interesting to you. We'll take silence as a big fat no. So if you want to see more of that, you got to let us know. This is the thing I always say at the library when they hand out the evaluation forms. I'm like, if you want the library to have more stuff like this, you got to let them know. You can't just show up and expect them to keep making more. You have to provide feedback. And so, you know, a simple little message on Twitter or on Google Plus or on, we're both on the Facebooks too. Just let us know that, hey, that thing was that you did with the on-air hangouts is neat. I'd like to see more of that. That's all we need to know. So vote exactly. With your words.
Yep. And of course, yeah, when you do come hang out with us, if that is sounds like a good idea, feel free to comment. I mean, we experimented with that a little bit. I mean, it happened to be my wife commenting, but you know. We responded during the podcast. We've not done that before.
No.
That's a first.
No, and that's one of the reasons I think this is kind of a compelling idea, is that it would provide that instant feedback. I'm enjoying it with the Comics Are Great show, and I'd love to bring it to the Lean Into Art show, but, you know, got to see if the interest is there. So, Rob, thank you for doing this thing with me on your wedding anniversary, on your 8th wedding anniversary. And thanks to Kate. Thanks to Kate for being so understanding.
Not a problem. She's a keeper. So
yeah.
Cool. Happy to do it, man.
All right. So, thanks everybody for downloading, listening and watching. And, until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And you know what? Thank you again, Jersey. And I have been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.